This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Victoria Martinez. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1197 features stories from my favorite Life Rattle writer, Monique Masabki. Our featured writer tonight is Monique Masabki. Monique Nadeau Masabki was born in 1966 in Toronto, the older of two children. Her father, a retired shipper receiver, and her mother, a devoted stay-at-home mom, are both natives of Sudbury. After a couple of moves, first to Georgetown, then to Mississauga, the family settled in Schomburg, a small town north of Toronto, a place that Monique still thinks of as home. Monique speaks fluent Franglish, a bastardized hybrid of French and English, which is widely spoken in northern Ontario, where her parents and brother now live. Monique is writing her first novel and also writes short stories on her blog under the name Monica Manning. Here now is Monique Masabki as she reads her first story on tonight's program. And remember, Life Rattle stories may contain situations and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
I worked in funeral service for more than 12 years. I met exceptional people who taught me many things. Stories like this are why I loved working in funeral service, and stories like this are why I hated it. Red Rose by Monique Masabki. Walter Pittman sits across from me, his hands clamped around a mug of coffee. He stares down at the table, though I'm sure he doesn't really see the hand-polished mahogany. Thin wisps of white hair are carefully combed back. His plaid shirt is buttoned at the collar. He looks so lost, is all I can think. I open the white folder labeled with his wife's name. Mr. Pittman? I keep my voice soft, soothing. He looks up at me, almost seems surprised to see me sitting there. I curve my lips, not a smile, but rather an expression of encouragement. It would, after all, be inappropriate to smile. I have a few questions to ask you so that I can fill out the necessary government forms. He nods, rotates his coffee cup. Did your wife have a middle name? He looks up at the ceiling. Ruth. Martha Ruth. I write Mrs. Pittman's name on the file and ask a few more questions. What was her maiden name? What was her birth date? Where was she born? Did she work outside of the home? I ask him. Mr. Pittman surprises me by nodding. His wife, after all, was 87. Hers was a generation of proud homemakers. I wait, my pen poised above the folder. She looked after me. His eyes glisten, but he manages a smile. She took very good care of me. I can see that she did. I put down my pen, link my hands together. This isn't the time to write. It is the time to listen. It's just the two of us. We don't have children. He shrugs. Some things are not meant to be. I say nothing. Simply nod my understanding. We have many nieces and nephews. He grins. We spoil them. I'm sure you do. We traveled quite a bit. Somewhat at ease now, he sips his coffee. Martha loved to travel. She always had to buy something, some little knick-knack to prove that we were there. What kind of things did she like to buy? Mr. Pittman sits back in his chair. Oh, you know, ceramic bowls, figurines. His voice trails off. Figurines? I prompt. He sits up again, shakes his head. She collected those figurines from the tea boxes. You know the ones? I nod. The Red Rose figurines. My mother collects them too. He snorts. I hate those damn things. Dust collectors is what they are. I bite back a smile. How many times had I heard my father grumble the same thing? She lined them up across the window ledge above the kitchen sink. He waves his hands back and forth to demonstrate. I got fed up one day and swept them all into a drawer. I didn't say a word, mind you. Just went about my business. She didn't say anything either. He sips his coffee. But the next morning, they were all lined up across the window ledge. I smile now. Before I went to bed that night, I put them all in the drawer. Mr. Pittman thumps the table with his fist. Next morning, they're back. This time I laugh. I can't help myself. He laughs too. This went on for years, he says. Every night I would stash them in the drawer, and every bloody morning I'd wake up and they'd be lined up across the window ledge, as if they'd been there forever. His smile fades then, and the back of my neck tingles. He cups his mug with both hands. When she became sick, he looks up at me. I mean really sick. And I could no longer take care of her, she moved into the home. His gaze shifts and he stares over my shoulder at some distant memory. For the last 2 weeks, every night before going to bed, I've put those damned figurines into the drawer, and every bloody morning I've taken them out and lined them up on the window ledge. He clears his throat. His moist gray eyes shift to mine. She would have wanted that, he says. I nod. Yes, she would.
That was Red Rose, written and read by Monique Masabki. Let's listen now to Monique's second story, Mamère Rosa.
Mamère Rosa by Monique Masabki. Our house sizzled with excitement whenever Mamère and Pépère announced they were coming for a visit. When I was a child, Mamère would bring two things with her from Sudbury, homemade date squares and money. The date squares were for me and my little brother, the money for playing cards. Every evening, once dinner was done, after the table was cleared and the dishes washed, the adults would regroup and play cards late into the night. The game of choice was usually pinochle or euchre, and sometimes both, but always played for money. Not a lot of money, only dimes and nickels, but money nonetheless. There's no point in playing cards if you're not playing for money. Mamère was firm on this. Even Yahtzee was played for money. Mom and Mamère spent the afternoons rolling dice, filling in the tiny squares on the score sheet, and exchanging coins. Approaching 100, my grandmother still plays cards. And wins. Regularly. We're not quite sure how she cheats. We haven't yet caught her in the act. She's a sly old bird. To celebrate Mamère's 99th birthday, the entire family gathers at her nursing home. Her children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. 5 generations of rowdy French Canadians in one room. In the center of it all sits Mamère in her favorite rose-colored wing chair. Her back straight and knees together, she sits with her hands folded primly in her lap. She wears a royal blue dress and pink nail polish. Earrings wink at her lobes and a brooch sparkles below her left shoulder. She rests like a queen upon her throne, receiving her loyal subjects, who bestow kisses on her paper-thin cheeks. She hasn't dressed up for the occasion. This is how she dresses all the time. She always looks ready for a party. Most often seen in a dress or a skirt, her hair and nails are always perfectly done. Even today, approaching 100, she is dressed for visitors, including her earrings and ever-present brooch. I watch Mamère as she sits in her chair. In her gnarled hands, she clutches a small white leather pouch. I know immediately what it is, for I have one just like it. My own white leather pouch, embossed with a gold cross, sits in my dresser drawer at home. Inside it is the pink rosary Mamère made for me for my first Holy Communion. It doesn't surprise me that Mamère holds it today. She attends Mass every Sunday without fail and still receives communion each week from the visiting priest at the nursing home. Alone for a moment, Mamea's sharp eyes wander over the group until they come to rest on me. Her mouth curves up in a serene smile and she winks. I excuse myself from a conversation with my dad and cousin Sue and wander over. Kneeling in front of Mamea, I lay my smooth hand over her wrinkled, crooked fingers. I glance down at the white leather pouch clutched reverently in her hands. What's in the pouch, Mamea? I gesture with my chin at her hands. I know she says her rosary regularly. I imagine the string of beads in her white leather pouch are worn from years of use, and I want to see them again. I want to hold those ancient beads in my hand as she has done so many times before me. Mamère glances around the room at her family. She leans forward and whispers, "There's a lot of people here today." I nod my head, prompting her to continue. Her eyes sparkle with excitement. "We might play cards later. I'm ready." She gives the white leather pouch a little shake, and rather than hearing the expected tinkle of rosary beads, I hear the distinct jingle of coins. A wide grin crosses my face, and I think to myself, I want to be just like her when I grow up.
That was Mamère Rosa, written and read by Monique Masadki. Monique's third and final story tonight is The Breakup.
The Breakup by Monique Masadki. "Tell me everything," Ellen says. She drops her purse on the floor and slumps into the chair across from me. "And don't leave anything out." "Thanks for coming," I tell her, and take her hand. Ellen is the perfect friend. She makes appropriate noises when she listens to my problems, and she always takes my side. Ellen gives me a reassuring squeeze, and I attempt a brave smile. She signals our favorite waiter, a self-proclaimed diva named Andre, who has served us every week for almost a year. He sashays over to our table. "Dry martini," says Ellen. "Straight up, Bombay Sapphire, olives." Ellen is serious about her martinis. Andre the diva responds with a knowing, "Mm-hmm." He knows that martinis mean crisis. They turn to me. Ellen raises a questioning eyebrow, and the diva cocks his head. Out of nowhere, the weight of the world falls on me, and I can't make a decision. As though the choice between a Cosmo or an apple martini is going to topple the scales of life, and nothing will ever be the same. Tears well up and my lip trembles. "Oh, honey." Andre pulls a tissue from an invisible pocket and dabs at my eyes, careful not to smudge my makeup. "Make it two martinis," says Ellen. Andre nods and scurries away to complete his mission. I shake my head, mortified at making a scene. I don't know where to start. I lift my hands in a hopeless gesture and let them drop to the table. "Why don't you tell me why you're leaving him?" Ellen prompts. I take a deep breath and let it out in a shaky puff. "It's just not working anymore." I shrug, not quite sure how to express how I feel. Ellen rests her elbows on the table, cups her chin in her hands, and waits. "Things were going so well for so long," I begin. "Josh was perfect." I stare up at the ceiling, and Ellen nods, prompting me to continue. "He listened when I talked. He really seemed to care, you know?" I knuckle away a tear. "When I got that promotion, he snuck in 2 mini bottles of scotch so we could celebrate. And no matter how late it was, he'd drop everything and make time for me." "Then why are you leaving him?" I sigh. "It's so hard to make the time to fit him in." Ellen nods, and I know she understands without judgment. "Almost every time I make plans, something comes up at work, and I'm rushing out to see him. Most of the time, I go back to the office when we're done, just to finish up a few things. I feel like I'm using him." I bury my face in my hands and groan. "It's too stressful. I need to find someone closer to home, someone I can see on the weekend. Andre the Diva returns and places our martinis on the table. He slips an arm around me, rubs my back for comfort. Boyfriend? He asks my friend. Ellen's face assumes a look of deep mourning. She shakes her head. Hairdresser, she says. Andre nods, and there is a moment of silence as we grieve for my loss.
That was The Breakup, written and read by Monique Masabki. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1197. Virginia Ashbury recorded Monique Masabki reading her stories. My name is Victoria Martinez. Life Rattle returns next Sunday night with more stories. Life Rattle is produced from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Good night.